Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. New Mexico Veterans Administration, or VA Clinics, as well as the VA Hospital in Albuquerque, have recently been in the news. An Associated Press examination of wait times at 940 VA hospitals and clinics nationwide has revealed that New Mexico facilities have some of the worst wait times and case backlogs of all VA clinics and hospitals in the country, bringing into question the level and timeliness of health care for our veterans. How can New Mexico veterans receive necessary health care for which they are eligible from the VA or other providers? Joining me in the studio today to discuss this issue are Vietnam veteran and past commander of the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, Pete Comstock, Eleanor Reiners, program manager and CEO of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, and Secretary and retired U.S. Army Brigadier General Jack Fox and Healthcare Coordinator and Program Manager Mitchell Lawrence, both from the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Pete Comstock, let's start with you. I read a January 2010 Albuquerque Journal article by Charles Brunt titled Veterans Helping Veterans. The article describes a meeting between you, a decorated Vietnam veteran, and a young Iraq War veteran. As you talk with him and mentor him, including about health care, tell us about the hurdles some veterans need to overcome just to begin thinking about getting necessary health care, please.
Well, Kathleen, our returning current war veterans, the first thing they need to do is get registered at the VA hospital and get their identification card so they can get into the system and then get assigned a primary care physician so they can start receiving health care.
Well, let's start back a little bit because sometimes, and I think this was demonstrated in the article, aren't there even psychological hurdles or even acceptance hurdles that veterans might need to overcome as well?
That's true. I think the thing that we deal with constantly on the returning veterans, especially the combat veterans, are combat trauma issues. Everybody that's been downrange has combat trauma issues. Maybe they don't get a diagnosis as PTSD, but they still have problems. And this keeps them away from the system a lot of times. And we have a mentoring program with the Military of the Purple Heart. We have successfully mentored 58 returning veterans, current war veterans, since the veteran you're talking about, which was Ground Zero. He was the first person we mentored. It's been a very successful program, saved a few lives, and it really does make a difference.
Well, and here's a quote from that article, and the Iraq veteran is Andres Lazo, and he says, "I would not have even walked into the VA hospital without a mentor like Pete. I didn't know how to register or get signed up for benefits. Now I have my own VA card. I've met with my primary care physician. I didn't know these things before." A lot of veterans don't.
No, they don't. They when they come out, they go through a transition program that explains all these benefits, and it can last anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. And oftentimes they're sitting there nodding off or they're not paying attention. Their attention span may be 15 minutes or less. And so they don't catch a lot of the information that's given out. So when they get out, a lot of them are blanked out of what it is they should be doing or how to go do it. And if they go to the VA by themselves, and if by accident the first person they meet, in their opinion, has an attitude problem, then they're walking out, and they may not come back again. But if we take them, we can assist them to go where they need to go, or if they're enrolling in college here at the University of New Mexico, that can be a little difficult to find the enrollment officer if you're not familiar with the campus. So we walk them there and sit with them until they get through the process.
Now, we've got a link to your organization on our website, the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts. Do you reach out to people or do they reach out to you?
It's both. It's amazing to me how many combat wounded veterans do not know the Military of the Purple Heart exists. Mm. And so we're constantly looking for them and offering the help. But we'll help any veteran. They don't have to have a Purple Heart. And we do help a lot that don't. We're the smallest organization of any of the veterans organizations, and we don't want to be the biggest one.
Okay. Eleanor Reiners, 10 years ago, the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, or VIC, came into being, starting first as transitional housing for single homeless veterans and expanding to include supportive services for singles and families. Tell us, do veterans find you, the VIC, the Veterans Integration Center, or do you find them?
It's both. We actually do outreach all over the city or all over the state where we actually take food supplies, clothing items, things like that, to go looking in the alleys, railroad stations, that type of thing. We actually go to the tent cities that are around the state. But they also come to us. Word of mouth actually is the best advertisement for the VIC. Veterans know, and veterans will refer them directly.
Now, where does helping veterans find health care they need fall on the VIC's list of priorities?
Well, we work through two grants through the VA. One is the Grant Per Diem Program for the transitional housing, and one is the supportive services. And part of the requirements are that is to make sure they're medically compliant. So when they come into our programs, the first thing we do is enroll them with the primary care. And then the primary care from there takes the ball and says, okay, you need some mental health, you need physical therapy. So they essentially do an assessment on the intake.
Now, are all veterans eligible for Veterans Administration health care services?
No, they're not. Some veterans do not qualify for VA services depending on their time in service, their discharge, character of discharge, that type of thing. It'll vary.
Now, I'm talking with Vietnam veteran and past commander of the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, Pete Comstock, Eleanor Reiners, who you just heard from, program manager and CEO of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, or VIC, secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services, Jack Fox, and healthcare coordinator and program manager, Mitchell Lawrence, also of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or on Twitter at KUNM News. Secretary Jack Fox, so we've heard a little bit about the landscape here in New Mexico, where some veterans might not even be aware they're eligible for health care. Some veterans don't believe they need it. Some can't bring themselves out of the house to get it. And some don't qualify for VA health care. The vision of the department is to be the premier veterans service provider and advocate in the nation, and to assist veterans and their families in establishing the privileges to which they are legally entitled. Given all of that information, how does your department, how does the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services assist veterans who fall within that range, large range of veterans who might need health care?
Well, I think our mission, following into that, obviously, and to tack on to what Pete said, is we want to make sure that the veteran is educated on what is available to he or she, and not even dependent on which war they served or which era they served in. So we're continually doing outreach into the communities. We are located in 18 communities with our veteran field service officers around the state. We are continually trying to find where the veterans are, meet with the veterans, and just as Peter was saying with the Purple Heart, educate them on what is available to them. And we have a grant program now, which is the Rural Veterans Program, and we are going out and actually trying to find the post-9/11 veteran. Because when that young man or woman gets out, sometimes they're not paying attention to the briefing they're receiving. They just want to go home. They're thinking about getting home and having a chicken fried steak with mom, and that's the high point on their list. And so we're going to the communities. We are tracking down where veterans are and making sure that we can find them and make them understand what they have received. It's not a benefit per se. I look at this as a fulfillment of a contract. That young man or woman raised their hand and said they were going to provide this great service to our nation, and our fulfillment of that contract as a nation and a state is to make sure that they receive everything that they have so rightfully earned and sacrificed for.
How do you reach out to veterans in those 18 communities? Do you post notices or do you make phone calls? Do you get members of the community to help? How do you do that?
We work with the various veteran service organizations. They obviously have a feel for the veterans in the areas. We are starting a program of benefits fairs, not just health-related, but going around the communities and doing a lot of advertising to get the veterans to come in. Tell veterans to get their friends to come in. And at that time, we will work with each veteran to try to make sure that he or she is aware of what is available to them and how they obtain those services.
Mitchell Lawrence, you are the healthcare coordinator and program manager for the Department of Veterans Services, I imagine you get phone calls from people, from veterans. When they call in, how do you assist them? How do you go about things?
Well, the first thing I do is I try to find out exactly what is their issue. Sometimes the issue is like Pete was saying, exactly trying to figure out how to access the VA healthcare. Or they may have come in and they just may not know what services are available from the healthcare arena. And my job is to kind of make sure and educate them to make sure they know what they're actually entitled to. And if for some reason they've been told no, my job is to try to advocate for them and figure out why they were turned away.
And I'm going to go ahead and give out your phone number. We'll do that a couple of times during this program. It's 505-383-2430. That's 505-383-2430. Mitchell Lawrence with the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. And you will take calls from people, will you not?
Yes, I will. Yes,
all right. Well, we're discussing health care for veterans today. I'm joined by the Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services, Jack Fox. I'm also joined by the Health Care Coordinator and Program Manager for that department, Mitchell Lawrence. I'm joined by Eleanor Reiners, Program Manager and CEO of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, and by Pete Comstock, a Vietnam veteran and past commander of the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts. We would love for you to join in our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, what has been your experience as a veteran with getting health care in New Mexico? We'll be back with you after this short break.
Healthcare and its costs can be confusing. New Mexicans have a right to comment on changes in health plans and rates. New Mexico's Health Insurance Rate Review is a team that's ready to help. NMHealthRateReview.com is a new, easy-to-use website. Sign up for email alerts and stay informed about changes that could affect health plans and premiums. To keep health insurance understandable, visit NMHealthRateReview.com. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Health Insurance Rate Review.
Here's a question. What are you curious about? As you wonder about your town, its history, its people, you ask and we report. It's a journalism project we call Curious New Mexico, a partnership between KUNM and the New Mexico News Board. You can share your Curious New Mexico question online at newmexiconewsport.com.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about health care for veterans. And Secretary Fox, when Senator Udall met with the Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Robert McDonald earlier this month, they spoke specifically of getting more and better care to veterans in rural New Mexico. And you've already referenced this a little bit, a specific initiative designed to get more and better health care to veterans in rural New Mexico. Tell us more about that initiative, please.
Well, I think one of the key cornerstones is the telehealth system that will allow that veteran, for instance, in Las Vegas or Silver City or Farmington or wherever they are across the state, to go to the local community-based center that provides veterans care. And through that, they can achieve or have access to excellent care from the VA in Albuquerque. They don't have to physically go. The system is designed to really work with veterans in these rural communities, whether it's post-traumatic stress counseling. The counselor can link up with that individual in Silver City, for example, and provide those services. Sometimes just traveling is stressful, and this is a great system the VA is working on, and I think it's going to change the whole way healthcare is going to be developed, not only for the military veteran, but for everybody in New Mexico in the future.
Now, Pete Comstock, you've walked people through starting out getting services with the VA. Walk us through and the listeners through. What does someone need to do if they're out listening and they know they want to get services, but they haven't gone through that process yet? What do they need to do, please?
Well, first of all, they need to bring a copy of their DD-214.
Which
this shows what their discharge status was, okay, what their length of service was. Among other things, awards and decorations. It's basically the history of their time in service and what the condition of their discharge was. And then if they're here in Albuquerque, they go over to the VA hospital, and it's right on the first floor. And when you walk in the front door, you make an immediate right-hand turn of the main hospital building. They you can't miss it. It's got a flagpole that's 40, 50 feet in the air with the American flag flying on it. And they make a right-hand turn as soon as they walk in the front door, and there is where we start. And there's a in a given day, there's 5 to 7 service officers there to take this input information, enroll them in the system, get their hospital identification card, get them assigned to a primary care physician, make their first appointment. So that's how it begins.
All right. And Mitchell, if they're not in Albuquerque, what steps do they need to take?
Well, it kind of all depends upon exactly what their healthcare needs are. You know, the VA center that we have in Albuquerque has a great ability and has a lot of healthcare that's at its disposal. But if you're looking for something like a just diabetes control or something that can be done at a smaller outpatient facility, those CBOCs, those community-based outpatient clinics around these states, they can go there and they can do the exact same thing they can do at the VA main medical center at in Albuquerque.
They need to bring their records and enroll. And
same
get...
thing. Just bring their DD Form 214, which gives basically the VA all their information to be able to prove and certify that they were actually a veteran and that they've met the qualifications to actually get care inside of the facility.
All right. And Eleanor Reiners, we've mentioned that some veterans do not qualify for VA care due to length of service or discharge issues, things like that. How do you approach issues with those veterans? What can they do to get care?
Well, most of the veterans, or pretty much all of the veterans that we deal with, are low income or no income. So we will actually help them apply for Medicaid. We do have here in Albuquerque the health care for the homeless. So we will set up appointments for them to go down there. But the key is to get them on Medicaid. And there is a Presbyterian who actually works with the Department of Veterans Services where we can get immediate health care for our homeless veterans.
Now, that's something – will you do that with any veteran or just veterans enrolled in your program?
Veterans in our program. Now, if veterans come and they're not in our program, we will make the referral, but we won't actually help them through the process. We'll just make a referral to the organization that can help them.
Is there an organization that can help veterans who are not eligible for VA care other than Eleanor's? When she makes a referral, is she able to send them to you, say, Mitchell Lawrence at the department, so you can help them?
Yes. One of the things that the Department of Veterans Services Healthcare Coordinator Program does is there's a lot of private citizens in the healthcare arena that have donated, that have let me know that they will donate their time, their services, and their skill sets for veterans at either no cost or very, very minimal cost. And so for those veterans that either aren't able to get VA care because of an income issue or because of the characterization of their discharge, we can, through the private alliances that we kind of supervise, we're able to hook those individuals up with private organizations or nonprofit organizations that have raised their hand and said, you know what, I want to do my part to help the veteran.
Let me give out your number again. It's 505-383-2430. People can find out about interesting programs that they might be able to participate in. It's Mitchell Lawrence, 505-383-2430. We're talking today about health care for veterans, and I'm joined by New Mexico Department of Veterans Services Secretary Jack Fox, by Vietnam veteran and past commander of the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, Pete Comstock, by Eleanor Reiners, program manager and CEO of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, and Mitchell Lawrence, who is the healthcare coordinator and program manager for the Department of Veterans Services. If you'd like to join in our conversation, call us at 277-5866 or 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, what has been your experience as a veteran with getting health care in New Mexico? Secretary Fox, let's talk a little bit about women's health care issues, veterans. What you have an initiative about that as well these days?
One of the things that we are concerned with the increasing number of women veterans, and it's going to grow. That's the largest segment of our veteran population, whether they're in the Navy, the Air Force, the Army. Those numbers are growing and expanding. And at this time in New Mexico, out of 170,000 veterans that we know of, approximately 17,000 are members of our female veterans. And we realize that sometimes the needs and requirements for a female veteran differ from that of her male brother. And we want to make sure that we're doing all we can to address those needs. A female veteran a lot of times is a single parent. She has the child. She's coming back from a combat situation. She has to readjust not only as a veteran but as a parent. Sometimes her ability to get a job is more difficult than that of her male counterpart. Her outlook mentally sometimes differs that from the males. And so we want to make sure that we're reaching out to the female veteran, that she has a place to come and has some people that can identify with her individual needs and make sure that she's taken care of. I mean, sometimes the female veteran comes and she has child care issues. She wants to go to the VA, but she has to find a place to make sure that her children are cared for. So the challenges are unique, more unique than that of the male veteran. And so New Mexico is standing up programs to make sure that we're dealing with those specific needs. And again, these young women are in greater numbers than ever before serving our country, and our country has to be ready to make sure that we're helping them when they come home.
Eleanor Reiners, does the Veterans Integration Center take in women with children, veterans?
No. We have single in the transitional housing, it's single men and women, and supportive services for veteran families. We actually do provide rental support and utilities and that type of thing for families, male, female, whatever. But there is another program in transitional housing called the Henderson House, who is our counterpart, kind of like a sister organization, I'd say. And they take in female veterans only, and they can have children up to 12 years old.
And that's the Henderson House, you
Henderson
say? Is
House,
it here in Albuquerque?
Here in Albuquerque, yes.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and read an email comment from Don Peters. He's with Not Forgotten Outreach in Taos, where they just purchased a property for a military family respite center. He asks about clinics that are contracted but lack training, access to VA records, and some referral abilities. And his question is, how to transition those clinics to have more access and better serve veterans? Is that an issue that you have come across in the department? Mitchell? Go right ahead.
Well, specifically with regard to that question, that would be something that obviously the VA Medical Center would have to be able to look at. I do know that they are trying to ensure that all the clinics are adopting what they call electronic health record, which means wherever that individual may go throughout the state or throughout the United States, one provider can see an individual in Amarillo, and then they can be seen in Silver City and be able to pull up that medical record so that patient doesn't have to go, you know, through the whole story all over again, and that provider can increase the ability of care because he's got continuity of care. He can see what the other provider was able to do and continue to work off and able to support what the first provider did. So I do know that the VA is implementing that across the United States.
And Pete, you want to add something?
Yes, another thing that falls right in, I think, to answering that veteran question with the VA is a program they have called My Healthy Vet. And that's an online access to medical care. And once they enroll in the program with the VA of My Healthy Vet, they can not only renew their prescriptions online without having to go to the clinic, without having to come to Albuquerque, but they can also communicate with their primary care physician. They can send an email in. These guys are used to communicating in this way. And send an email in and say, hey, what about this, that, or the other? And it's been my experience, it'll be answered that very same day. For what their question is, or what the hey, I need to make an appointment, or this prescription is causing me some side effects. What's my doc think about that? And have an answer right back. And that might fit in real well with this gentleman's question of getting them enrolled in online with My Healthy Vet.
My Healthy Vet. Now, Mitchell, just to revisit in Don Peters' question, he talked about a contracted clinic. There must be non-contracted clinics as well. Do you advise veterans to go to those, or should they stick with contracted? How do they find out whether they're going to be in a place that can access their medical records?
Well, if you're inside of the actual VA Medical Center, and again, when I say the VA Medical Center, I just don't mean the main Raymond G. Murphy Center. I mean any CBOC, facility like that, they're going to have access to that.
Tell us what CBOC means one more time, please.
Community-based outpatient clinic.
Okay.
And so what happens is if for some reason the veteran has to go outside of that VA center, I know one of the requirements for the individual to be able to have the facility that they see build the VA is that center has to also adopt the electronic health record. And so, again, a lot of those issues with regards to continuity of care, which a lot of veterans have issues about, I'm hoping that they will be solved with just being able to understand that if you're not just because you're being seen in a VA a facility for care that's not under the VA umbrella, if those individuals are being paid and reimbursed by the VA, those individual facilities will be using electronic health records.
But if they're not being paid or reimbursed by the VA, should a veteran stay away from that because they're not going to have the same access to healthcare records?
Well, no. What would happen is the individual after the appointment would have to request for their medical records so that the next time that they are seen in a VA facility that they can bring those in. And what the VA will do is the VA will scan those documents and make it a permanent part of their electronic health record.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring a caller into our conversation. It's Steve from Albuquerque. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I want to say something about wait times. I have really had no problem whatsoever. I became eligible as I applied in January of this year, and during that time, between now and January, I've had three medical appointments that had no extreme wait times. The only problem I've had was they had a mix-up on my Social Security number, told me to go to the next desk at that time that I became eligible. I went over there, couldn't access through the computer my records, so they said call back the next day. Well, that was the problem. I called back over and over for a month, and nobody answered the phone. Finally, after having left about 10 messages and called maybe every 3 days, somebody did answer, and from then on, I've had nothing but good things to say about the VA. And all of the people have been courteous, efficient, and it's just been a really good, pleasant experience all the way around. Other than the phone answering, everything's been perfect as far as I'm concerned.
And, Steve, has that been with the VA hospital here in Albuquerque?
Yes, okay. Building 41, the VA hospital here in Albuquerque.
Now, so, yes, you wanted to go ahead and comment, Secretary Fox?
Yes, and to kind of follow on Steve's comments there, Director Welch has taken over the VA hospital here. I believe he came in about December. And I can say, having worked closely with him, he is diligent and determined that he's going to improve any problems that may have existed in the past. He's working very hard to make this program more efficient for the veterans. I believe he's actually added another line for the veterans to call in. He is sensitive to these programs. He has gone out, and he listens to veterans like Steve, and I've seen him take immediate action. It's a big program, and as Pete and I were talking earlier, you just don't turn a huge hospital around in 24 hours. It's like a big aircraft carrier. It takes a little bit to turn it around. But I can tell the right captain's at the helm of the ship, and this VA hospital in Albuquerque is going to stand out as a premier example of how to care for a veteran community.
Now, Mitchell Lawrence, Steve's particular issue with having the wrong Social Security number listed and then calling for a month and not getting through to anyone, is that something you could have assisted him with? I mean, and I know it's hard to really say, but if he had phoned you, would you have been able to help him out, do you think?
Yes, I would. Well, what I could do is, obviously, like the Secretary was saying, we work very closely with the VA, and I work very closely with the patient advocates. And so basically, having just retired from the 377th Medical Group, which is co-joined with the actual VA center, I have a lot of contacts that I still have, and I'm able to at least try to be a liaison to find out what the issues are. And again, you know, like I said, each issue is specific to you know their to what's going on. If I can maybe open up a door that individual was unable to, I definitely will.
So you're prepared to be an advocate for someone when they call you with any particular situation?
Yes, ma'am. I'll take any questions.
Let's go ahead and give out your phone number again. That's Mitchell Lawrence. He's the healthcare coordinator and program manager for the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. And his phone number is 505-383-2430. That's 505-383-2430. Let's go ahead and bring another caller in. It's Nancy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Yeah, I have like to ditto what was been said. I moved here in October, had transferred from another VA in Texas, and by the time I got to the VA, They got me into a primary care within 6 weeks. I had specifically asked for a female doctor, and everything from lab to podiatry to physical therapy, endocrinology, I've been through all of that, and it's been excellent. And the wait times are the next to nothing. I mean, I was expecting, you know, what I went through in Texas. What I went through there really wasn't their fault. It was a small facility. They didn't even have room to put any more employees. But I just want to, you know, I think it's important to compliment when it's deserved.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Nancy, this morning. And Eleanor Reiners, are you hearing similar information about what's happening over at the VA these days as well?
Well, I believe that there is a difference over there. I can see the responsiveness over at the VA to be different. I think the leadership has made an impact. From our perspective, the people that we work with in the Healthcare for the Homeless Veterans are a team that we've been working with since the inception, and they're actually able to get us our appointments a little bit quicker because they actually make the appointments through the VA. They are VA personnel. The issue, I think, comes in the specialties. Specialty like cardio, something like that, will take some time to get an appointment going. And you really have to be working directly with the VA personnel to push it a little bit.
And Pete, what is your advice to people when they have to deal with a specialist, when you're mentoring someone, and they just keep at it?
Well, add on that the quality of care at this VA hospital for the last 18 years has been superior. The problem has been getting into the care, and that's improving greatly. We're hearing that from our returning current war veterans constantly that, hey, we're able to get in, they treat us well, and we're getting the care we want. I've been getting all of my health care there for 18 years, and I got a little bit of experience with it, and it's pretty darn good. So the telephone thing I never heard of. I hope that doesn't happen again. And that might have been a transition from the answering service that they were using or how they were doing it or what they're doing now. But I hope that doesn't ever happen again. But if it does, when you run into a problem like that with a frustration level for a current war veteran goes way up, that's the kind of thing that causes them to say, the heck with it, I'm not going back again. And they get a hold of Department of Veterans Services or the military or the Purple Heart. All of us have access through channels of people we know to solve problems like that that are kind of unique and get them into the system because there's a quirk going on there. And the same with the specialists. Specialists come through your primary care physician unless it's emergency. And the biggest thing is when you see the primary care physician for the first time, let him know the problems, or she, the problems you're having. And so you can get that referral immediately. Don't wait a month or two to tell him and then ask for the referral because you've delayed it even longer. And if it's an emergency or a real serious thing, they're gonna move the doors and get you in. If you've got cardio problems or if you've got combat trauma issues, they've got a team that takes you through that to get you out and referral for that, and that'll happen immediately. That could happen the very same day that you signed up and get your primary care and go through their transition program that they have for returning veterans to assess them on the combat trauma issues. So the help is there. Just come in and do it.
I'm hearing speak up, reach out, and don't despair.
That's right. And if you get frustrated, give the Department of Veterans Services a call, military of the Purple Heart, or any other service organizations, and we'll help you.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Ronald from Albuquerque. Good morning, Ronald.
Good morning. I have a couple of different questions on the access issue.
Okay.
First off, when I go see my doctor, who takes excellent care of me, sometimes I have a bit of a wait to get an appointment, nothing horrible, but then I hear that part of the reason there's a paucity of appointments is people no-showing for either procedures or for appointments. I'm wondering, I've never thought to ask, is there some sort of a standby thing where if I was to sit around near the CT scanner and somebody didn't keep his appointment and I had a CT ordered where I could get in earlier? That's first question.
Right.
Then second question, we talked about these contract providers. I guess that's kind of like, I recently got a card in the mail saying if I couldn't get an appointment within 30 days, I could go downtown to see somebody if I made arrangements properly. Now, I'm wondering if I take advantage of that program, would the person I see downtown have access to the lab results and x-rays from my years of being treated here and at a couple of other VA facilities, or would he be starting with a blank sheet of paper and need to redo all the lab work and x-rays I had done to try and figure out what's going on?
All right. Well, Ronald, thanks for your call today, and let's get our panel started on those questions. And so, Pete, let's start with you. Is there a standby system where if someone doesn't show up with it for a particular service, someone's sitting there, they can actually jump in and take their appointment? Are you aware of that?
I am. And the answer is yes, no, and maybe for that, and I'll allude to it. The best thing you can do is, if you're having something like that, is say, hey, if there is a cancellation, please call me. And if you're close enough, as example, to the VA hospital, I've had that happen before, that if you're within, say, 30 minutes of it, and you've left a number, like, say, dental, that happens in dental a lot of times. If somebody doesn't show and you've been waiting and you say, hey, well, if somebody cancels, please call me. And I've had them call, and you can get worked in. But this no-show thing, I want everybody to hear about this. I can't remember the numbers, but it's enormous, the number of appointments that are made that are not kept. Mm. And they say over and over again, if you're not going to be able to make your appointment, call and let us know so we can call somebody. We can fill that slot.
As a service to your fellow veteran.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's if we just took the number of appointments, it's in the hundreds every month of no-shows, and we could reschedule people waiting to get in, we'd solve a lot of problems.
Now, we're talking today about healthcare for veterans. I know we have a second part of a question from Ronald. We will get to that. But I want to let people know I'm joined by Vietnam veteran and past commander of the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, Pete Comstock, Eleanor Reiners of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services, Jack Fox, and healthcare coordinator and program manager, Mitchell Lawrence, also of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. Please join our conversation at 277-5866 or call our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be back with you again after this short break.
Need a new home for that gently used couch? Upgrading a bathroom? Restore has it all, from building supplies to home furnishings. Restore purchases and donations have built 175 homes for low-income families in Albuquerque. Shop Habitat for Humanity Restore, 4900 Manal, west of San Mateo, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. For large donation pickup, call 265-0057. A message from the tax-exempt Greater Albuquerque Habitat for Humanity.
Not everybody has an old car or truck sitting around, but our vehicle donation program accepts almost anything with an engine, running or not. We take farm equipment, scooters, motorcycles, RVs, boats, high cube vans, even a big riding mower. It's worth a call to see if your donation qualifies, because you get rid of whatever it is, plus get a tax deduction and a KUNM membership with one simple phone call. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about healthcare for veterans. And we had a caller, Ronald, just before the break, and he was talking about if he can't get an appointment within 30 days, he can go downtown and seek other care. And he was asking about access to records. And Secretary Fox, I believe he's talking about a program that just began in early November of 2014, the Choice Program, which will cover non-VA care for eligible veterans enrolled in VA health care. And there's a, we may have posted the website, but there's certainly information online. Do you have to sign up for that? And then let's talk about the records access part of that too.
Well, the Veterans Choice Program is directed to a veteran. Obviously, you have to be signed up in the VA care system. But if a veteran lives outside of a 40-mile mileage radius from a CBOC or the VA, they're entitled to participate in this program and use a provider maybe that's more convenient for them to reach. And that's really critical. That goes back into what you were saying when Senator Udall and Secretary McDonald visited earlier, is providing better access to care for the veterans. And that choice program allows that veteran some flexibility. And obviously, the VA is going to work with them and make sure that records are provided or they exchange records to care for that individual. Obviously, they don't want that individual veteran to start from ground zero all over again. But it's to provide that health care quality that he or she needs at that time. Let me back up just 1 minute. I want to emphasize again the importance of what Pete started with. You have to register. And that's what we are trying to reach out to these younger veterans all the time. If a veteran gets out of the service and maybe he or she doesn't even realize there's anything troubling them at the time, and maybe there won't be, but they have to register because we all age. And age-related problems can be service-connected problems. And if you don't get registered in the system, you're not going to have access. So CBOX and VAs and all of that stuff won't matter if you don't get registered. And I just want to emphasize that again. That is so critical for the veteran and his or her family.
Now, let's Mitchell Lawrence, is there a separate registration that's necessary to participate in the CHOICE program? Or how does a veteran take – and one of the conditions is if you've been told that you will need to wait more than 30 days in addition to the 40-mile potential requirement for participation, and Ronald referred to that, how does one actually get into that CHOICE program?
Basically what will happen is if the individual is told that either they are for further than 40 miles or that the care that they need is past 30 days past the indicated date. And with the indicated date, and that's very important to understand, is if you need to be seen by a provider and the provider says, okay, you need to be seen a specific service within, say, 60 days, well, that 30 days doesn't start until the end of that 60 days. And so basically what will happen is the individual will call up and talk to the VA. And once the VA can validate that the individual is, A, enrolled and that the individual is his care or his or her care is going to be outside of that window, they will help find a provider that was outside of the VA care that has signed a contract with the VA for reimbursement, and that individual can be will be told where those providers are in him or her's local community, and at that point, that individual can go on and make an appointment.
And that's how to take advantage of that CHOICE program.
Yes, and with the key being making sure that you get the approval first, and not just take your card and just go to a provider and incur services.
And Eleanor Reiners, have people who are with the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, your clients, have they taken advantage of this CHOICE program, and what has the experience been?
No, we haven't had an issue at this point to where they've had to use the CHOICE program.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring in our next Secretary Fox. You wanted to add something?
I just want to say one of the challenges, if you're in the Albuquerque, Santa Fe area, usually accessibility to the VA is not that great a challenge. I'm not saying you don't have scheduling problems or appointment problems, but we are a large state, and having the ability for a veteran to have access to his or her health care is critical. We are working with other state agencies and Director Welch at the VA looking at our transportation system. Our hope is in the next few months have a coordinated, robust system so that if you're in Deming or Farmington, if you're in Crown Point or Hagerman, you can get to the care you need. That's one of the greatest challenges. And going back to Pete's problem, the challenge on canceled appointments, sometimes it's canceled because that veteran, she could not get from her hometown to the care she needed at that given time. So transportation is a very key to providing health care to our veterans, and we're working very hard on that. I feel like if we solve that transportation issue, we're going to do a lot to improve the quality of care that the veteran's going to get, because they're going to be happy with what they receive if they can get to the point where they can receive it.
And you say that you're looking to have that program begin in the next few months?
We are working with other state agencies and the federal government on the assets that are available. We want to coordinate the federal and state pools. There are a lot of pools out there of resources, but we need coordination, and we're working on that. And I think that's going to help these veterans receive the health care they need.
Well, give us a sense. Is anyone aware of what's the farthest distance somebody in New Mexico might have to travel? I mean, maybe you've looked at that in trying to solve this issue. I mean, is it hundreds of miles sometimes, or is it?
We're a large state. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And obviously, I want to point out again that if you live in Las Cruces, your primary source is going to be the VA in El Paso. If you live in Hobbs, Big Springs is where you're going to wind up going. If you live in Clovis or Clayton, you're going to go over to Amarillo. But basically the rest of the state, getting here is a challenge. And you may think, well, gosh, it's only 200 miles. Mm. If you're an 80-year-old Korean War veteran, 200 miles is a long way to travel. And so we're trying to help them with that.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Nat from Santa Fe. Good morning, Nat.
Good morning. Thank you for doing this show. It's been really informative and very good.
Great.
My call is about veterans having access to medical cannabis as a appropriate therapy, if that's appropriate for that veteran. 22 veterans a day commit suicide, and medical cannabis has been very helpful to many veterans as a form of treatment. But currently, healthcare providers within the VA are explicitly forbidden from being able to fill out recommendations forms for state medical cannabis programs. And our state has a medical cannabis program. I have to disclose that I'm not a veteran, but I am a medical cannabis patient from a traumatic brain injury and PTSD, and I am an advocate for the medical cannabis program. So for veterans that are dependent on the VA for their health care, they're denied equal access to state medical cannabis programs. There's two bills in Congress right now, the Veterans Equal Access Amendment that would forbid the VA from using any funds to punish physicians who write state legal medical cannabis recommendations, and would allow veterans to have safe and legal access to cannabis as a therapy for therapeutic use. And there's another one, the Compassionate Access Research Expansion and Respect States Act, which would authorize the VA, VHA to recommend medical cannabis and would allow veterans to disclose cannabis therapy to the VHA without fear of reprisal.
All right, Nat, let me go ahead, Nat, and get our panel to address this as we have more callers and time is running down. But thank you for taking the time, holding on the line, and getting your call through. Obviously, this medical cannabis, it's a shifting landscape we're looking at, not just with the military, but nationwide. Mitchell Lawrence, how is that issue being handled in the military these days?
Well, exactly what the caller said. She referenced state and then she referenced federal. And when you're dealing with the VA federal mental health care system, it is a federal agency. And while the state may allow it, you know, that's not the federal government. And so exactly what she was saying, you're going to be looking at, legislative changes to be able to allow federal healthcare facilities to be able to do that. But currently, that's a federal issue, and as long as the federal government still looks at cannabis as a Schedule I narcotic, and then that probably won't change unless, again, laws have changed.
Unless that legislation that Nat referenced is passed by Congress. Let's go ahead and get a couple more calls in here. Let's bring in a Mark from San Antonio, New Mexico. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I wanted to ask, with health care providers at the VA in Albuquerque, how many hours of administrative time do they have a week? And at an outpatient clinic, say, by a subcontract provider, how many hours of administrative time do those providers have?
All right. Well, Mark, let's see if we can maybe there's no specific number known, but let's see if anybody is aware of a contrast. Yes, go ahead, Mitchell Lawrence.
Well, having spent almost 27 years in the Air Force Medical Service, I do know that as providers' templates, which is basically the way that they schedule their day, most of the times the healthcare administrators within those facilities will take time for those providers to be able to have what was called a provider's time, so they can do their notes and do those things. But again, it all depends upon the provider, the specialty, the levels of access of care. But normally, within that provider's template, they will have admin time built in.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in probably our last caller of the day. It is Patty from Santa Fe, who has a specific question. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, thank you for having this program.
Sure.
Just recently, my dad has, you know, he's a veteran, a Korean War veteran, and he is visually impaired at this time. It's been a gradual process. He's not getting out as much just to go and probably see a doctor, but he has private doctors, I think, under VA care or VA benefit. My question today is, what is available to someone like that who's up in age and can't get out as much for physical, let me say, in-home physical therapy? And how would he qualify for that, or would he qualify for that?
All right, Patty, thanks for your call. And go ahead, Mitchell, you want to address that, please?
There are programs within the VA, depending upon your father's condition, your father's rated disability, that they can do things like there's programs that will provide individuals to come in and help your father. Again, and as the secretary was also saying, with the telehealth initiative that's coming on, there may be situations where, depending upon what your father's medical needs are, with something as simple as a computer and an internet connection, he may be able to sit inside of the comfort of his own living room and be able to interact with his provider that way.
Well, Mitchell Lawrence, I want to go ahead and give out your phone number one more time. First, I want to ask you, is there any question that is too small for a veteran to call and ask you and try to get information about?
No, not at all. Anything that they have, please give us a call. And if we don't have the answer, we will find the answer for you.
All right. And your number is 505-383-2430. That's 505-383-2430. Eleanor Reiners, we need to wrap up. And so I just want you to speak to the veterans out there and give them some words of encouragement about getting care, please, or how to go about it.
So I just want the veterans to know out there that I have to agree with Pete and the panel that once you get the access to the VA services, they are very good services. I've had no complaints once the services are available. But the key is work with your service providers, work with the VA. But the organizations like the Order of Purple Heart and the Department of Veterans Services and the VIC, we will help any veteran with a referral to get them to the right medical care or to the person who can get them the medical care. So call the outside agencies if you can't get VA support, but work with the VA. They're making some changes over there, and I think they're making a difference.
And Pete, anything you want to add in that regard that you want to say to veterans out there listening today?
Well, I want to say to the veterans and the active duty personnel, we have over 4,000 National Guard members here in New Mexico. And they access their health care a little bit different. But active duty people with combat trauma issues have a real problem trying to get help while they're in the service. And I urge them to contact the military of the Purple Heart, because we have some excellent programs to help you with this, and especially if you're having trouble getting in on those combat trauma issues. We can help in the meantime. We can assist you in between appointments to keep you on the right track and help you transition back.
And that's Pete Comstock with the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, and you can contact his organization. Secretary Fox, let's end with you here. We've heard some good things. We've heard about programs in the offing. It sounds like there's a lot of optimism. What would you like to add to end our conversation today?
I would just like to tell our veteran community in New Mexico to remember that the Department of Veterans Services has 17 field offices located throughout the state. They work with the Veterans Administration. They work with the other service organizations to make sure that veteran has access. There's 12 community-based clinics throughout the state of New Mexico. The health care is there. We're doing our best to make sure that our veterans have access to that care.
Well, we want to thank our guests today, Secretary Jack Fox and Health Care Coordinator and Program Manager Marshall Lawrence from the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services, Eleanor Reiners of the New Mexico Veterans Integration Center, and the New Mexico Military Order of the Purple Hearts, Pete Comstock. Thanks to all of you. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. Jefferson White engineered the show today. Kavimova Head is our assistant producer and handled our phones. Elaine Baumgartle is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This is the KUNM Call-In Show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.